A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 79. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television. And today we are continuing our discussion of Ultraviolet. This is Brian from Canada.
This is Ilona from Canada.
And this is Eric from Canada.
Ultraviolet was a 6-episode drama about the Code 5s, that's Roman numeral 5, or V. And the Code 5s may or may not be vampires. They seem strikingly similar to vampires. And we follow a group of people who hunt down the Code 5s and chase them. And we have this ambiguity of whether the good guys are really good and investigating and protecting, or whether they're more of a death squad hunting people down. Now, I should also mention that this is not our standard format for British Invaders. We usually have two of us, Eamon from England and myself. Well, this time we have a special all-Canadian team.
Okay, let's get throw things off talking about the stories and the world of Ultraviolet. And that the stories themselves begin with an ordinary police officer, but when he's going to attend the wedding of a good friend of his, the man doesn't show up at the altar. And so this obviously is very unusual activity for him, and as this detective investigates the disappearance, he discovers more and more unusual things and the tale of one or more conspiracies.
This was a very good introduction to the series. It gave a very distinct beginning to what would have been what seemed to be, at the time, a regular run-of-the-mill detective story. As things go pass on, the story picks up the more supernatural effects to what are these things that seem to stalk without warning.
Because in his day job at the same time, he was investigating an unusual murder case in plain sight, but nothing showed up on film. That they checked the recording videos and a man seemed to suddenly slump over dead.
Yes, that's right. And this first episode is really about setting up the series and setting up the ideas. So you start getting the ideas of these people, the Code Fives, who don't show up in mirrors, don't show up on video or on film, and seem to have these strange things about them. And you start seeing these people who are investigating them. And it's really about setting things up. And by the end of that first episode, you end up with our main character, Michael, being part of this investigative team. And things are really set up to have the individual episodes and stories that follow it, and also to start the ongoing story that spans the 6 episodes.
Episode 2 involves expanding on that premise. Code V is involved in a hit and run with 2 people on a motorcycle. We're not sure as to why it couldn't have gone more peacefully. You start to see elements of more vampiric leanings, for example, especially with the car, with the car's windows being almost sunproof. At the same time, in the real world, Michael is being forced to follow the trace of money being pushed between different groups and different actions. He's doing 2 jobs at once at this point, one for the squad and one for his own detective work.
There was a bit of a feel at this point that once this team had an investigator, a police investigator, they had Michael there, they were starting to think, okay, now we have someone who understands how to do this, we can start doing our following the money for these Code Fives and look into, well, how are these things happening and what's going on?
And we learn more of the different attributes of the Code Fives in this and how they may seem to us to possibly, or possibly not, be vampires or have sparked the myths thereof.
Yes, that's right. We certainly get into that. In the next episode, we have a female barrister, a lawyer, who is, in the opening scene, saved from an attempted rape. And the thing is, we don't see, and on the films and everything, no one can see who saved her or why. And she didn't see anything either. So there are these odd questions there. And there were questions about her situation. Her husband had died, but she was also involved in some experimental fertility technology. So she was actually pregnant, and there were experimental things going on there, and the Code Fives may or may not be involved. So there were some interesting things in that one and some issues that were dealt with as they went along as well.
And part of the questions of looking for Code 5 involvement is that the Code 5 tissue doesn't appear in instruments. So locating it or detecting it is always a challenge for any of the team.
Yes, it's like they were figuring out what was happening based on what they couldn't see.
Which adds mystery.
Absolutely.
That brings us to a story which begins with, in a church, a 12-year-old boy suddenly attacking a priest and stabbing him to death. A boy who had no history of violence and who was being prepared for the priesthood. And this, all of a sudden, this and several other young boys acting strangely brings in our team to investigate, is there Code 5 involvement?
This brings out, in both of the last couple episodes, but that one for sure, the idea that you have a lot of sort of hard issues being dealt with in this story. Certainly with the fertility and pregnancy and even abortion type issues from the previous episode. But this one we were just talking about starts dealing with things like priests and pedophilia and other men and young boys and pedophilia and things like that. And things that are not related to that. And what, if anything, is the Code 5 involvement in this situation? And you have some nice scenes in there with Pierce, the leader of their team, who is a priest himself, dealing with what he thinks about people sort of running to the idea of priests and pedophilia. So there were some interesting things in there.
It was also very hard to watch, from my point of view. These two story arcs were so dark and deep that you couldn't really see for what it was because you were already being assaulted visually.
They certainly didn't hold back on the hard issues and the tough ideas in those middle two episodes.
No. Episode 5 involves two Brazilians looking for Dr. Marsh. Now, we're not talking about Angie Marsh here. We're talking about her husband, Robert. And it involves a great deal of conspiracy and intrigue and why some things seem to be one way and yet how does it get to the end. This brother and sister are trying to look for Dr. Marsh. That doesn't really go into why they're looking specifically for him. However, they do talk about a lot of religious issues. It did wind up talking about hemophilia because the male was bleeding, and they were looking for a way to stem that. I really did appreciate the whole way that the character Vaughn Rice had to deal with his own mortality, facing against what appeared to be four seemingly harmless coffin-like detail, dealing with how am I going to escape this. In the end, it
chose a creative solution.
Yes.
Yeah. But only this series could have pulled off.
Maybe, yeah. It also, that episode brings out a lot of the ideas of the Code Fives using medical science. And we had had hints to it and references before that they were interested in human blood diseases and human cancer and things like that. Well, in this, you get into the idea that they are very interested in it. They have scientists of their own, and they are doing research into different things related to blood that may be in part related to keeping their human food source clean and may also be related to the idea of alternatives to humans as a feeding source. So there are definitely questions being brought up in this series. It's highlighted in that episode that maybe the vampires aren't the bad guys after all. Maybe they are trying to achieve a more peaceful and less predatory situation. In the final episode, a Code 5 is holding Kirsty and basically blackmailing Michael. And it sort of brings the situation with Jack and Kirsty, the almost married couple from the first episode, it brings that situation to a head. And we find out a little more about the situation with Jack and why he became a Code 5 and how he felt about things, and the situation with Kirsty, and of course the situation with the Code 5s in general, and exactly what they are doing, what their motivations are, and what their plan is. This sort of brings things to a conclusion. This is the definite conclusion that Joe Ahern, the writer and director, was talking about, that gives us some finality to the series, but leaves it open for a continuation, which was never actually done, but it gives us that conclusion.
This is a good story arc in itself. For these characters and their situation, it seems to resolve most of the
feels
threads.
Feels over a minute. Most people don't even know they've been infected. It makes you very susceptible to suggestion. They don't need to dirty their hands much. They get asked to do it for them.
So what have we got? Where's all the crosses?
Holy water. Jury's out on that. It's a bit like homeopathy. It's a question of faith on both sides. They can be superstitious too. In my opinion, religion is a placebo, which isn't to say placebos can't work.
Now, I'd like to talk about the world of Ultraviolet just a little bit. We've touched on most of it, but we should talk a little bit about what the Code Fives are and what the organization that the main characters are in chasing after them, what they're like. So the Code Fives, as we've discussed, are very much like vampires. They have a lot of the traditional ideas of not being able to go out in the sun and drinking blood, converting people by biting them so they become vampires or Code Fives as well. They did this type of modernization where you have the Code Fives using a lot of modern technology. They also took the interesting twist on vampires not seeing themselves in mirrors and said that any technological way of seeing or hearing a vampire won't work. So they can't be heard over a telephone or an audio recording. They can't be photographed. And they can't even leave fingerprints.
Mm-hmm. And with that, to detect them, the heroes, or the protagonists, I should say, are armed with gun sights that have mirrors on them, so that whatever they don't see in the mirror is thus Code 5.
Yes, and that's sort of the first instance. There are others, but that's the first instance, I think, of them using what they don't see on recordings and video and so on to determine what's happening and the presence of Code 5 of some sort. You also, again, in this sort of use of technology, which this show is quite big on, while the hunters do use wooden stakes and put a stake through the heart of Code 5 in some cases, they also use guns, but rather than regular ammunition, they use carbon fiber bullets, which they implied that initially maybe they were wooden bullets, but the carbon fiber bullets do the same thing.
But Jeff hit it exactly in the heart.
That's right.
Which doesn't often happen.
It does make some things interesting, and they have this definite idea of these sort of updates, and the medical technology is quite important on both sides. And the science in this, as well as the fact that they never actually use the word vampire, it isn't spoken once in the series, those two things form the trademark of this series, I would say.
Definitely, yeah. I've never seen vampires have to use speech synthesis software before to talk on the phone.
Yes, that was an interesting twist. I thought that was quite well used in the series.
It actually gives it more credence to, like I say, the soullessness of a vampire. In the fact that they have to give up more than just their humanity, they wind up having to give up every way they can possibly communicate.
And the idea of whether the vampires have souls or not, even whether they have human emotions or human-like emotions, it's really a question that's left open in this.
Because the medical examiner commented that they couldn't find a pulse on the Code 5 or blood pressure or temperature, it adds to what's moving them. It's the part of the mystery.
That's right. Now, I think that leads us nicely into our regular little feature of the good and the bad, the ups and downs. What did we like and not like about this series? So, Eric, what did you like about Ultraviolet?
Oh, the science appealed to me. As someone who's a long-term science fiction fan, I like the scientific approach to these creatures that, what are they? Because it could easily have gone into more mystical, if this was an American one, suddenly brought in magic or such, but no, they kept this show, Ultraviolet, kept it well, scientific, procedural. They examined these different aspects of the Code 5 material and what it meant. In general, a pretty good balance between the characters, between your shoot-em-all and they all are evil kind of characters, and then the, well, we must examine them, and then the, well, but some of these used to be my friends. They're still alive, even though they're in the prison, but can they be brought back? Do they want to be brought back?
Yes, some of those things were definitely very well used, the science and technology aspects for sure. I will add to that, I quite liked the look of this show. It had a very dark and modern kind of look. It was shot in an interesting way. It was very stylistic and very stylish and had this very modern spy show combined with cop show kind of feel that just happened to incorporate these elements of the Code 5s and the things that they could and couldn't do.
I think at one point all of the main characters were wearing leather jackets at some point, even the priest.
Yes, they certainly got into things like that. And I think in most scenes, Dr. Angie Marsh is wearing black, usually all black. But yeah, it certainly had a nice, dynamic, modern look to it, which was quite fun to see. Ilona, what did you like?
What did I like? Overall, I found the show quite fun, actually. It holds its own if you look at it from an outside, point of view. I did, however, find it to be pressing issues that pressed many buttons, and I did have trouble with that. But overall, I really did enjoy that it added a nice little niche for itself into the vampire stories. I also enjoyed seeing Stephen Moyer in the show, even though he was only in 2 episodes there. He had already had background into the vampire work that when he did go on to True Blood, he already had something that he could say to the people when they did produce it, oh yeah, I've been a vampire before.
I should also mention something that was done quite well in here was that there was an ongoing story from the beginning of episode 1 through the end of episode 6 that was never completely put aside, that was always present, and yet the episodes, certainly the 4 of the 6 that were in the middle, those episodes really had their own stories and I think stood on their own fairly well at the same time as having this ongoing story. Now we should talk about some of the negatives as well. So Ilona, I think you're wanting to get to some things here. So what did you not like as much in Ultraviolet?
I did not like some of the issues that they pushed, some of the buttons that they pressed, particularly the pregnancy issue and the pedophilia episode. Those two just rubbed me the wrong way. They made me feel very uncomfortable. I mean, not that I'm a stranger to things, shows that make you feel uncomfortable. I've seen many shows out there that will push buttons, but these ones seem to just really rub you the wrong way. As well, I had issues with the presentation of the series. Not in the fact that it was not beautiful to look at, because it was beautiful to look at. I couldn't understand them. I am hearing impaired, and because the disc setup does not have subtitles, it especially made characters like Vaughn Rice and sometimes even Father Pierce J. Harmon hard to understand because they would lower their voices.
It did have quite a moody feel to it, and I think in some cases with that sort of dark, moody feel, they may have gone a little bit far in the sort of quiet speech and speech being a little bit slurred at times even. So I could see there could be some issues there, and it is unfortunate that they did not include subtitles on the DVDs. For my part, there definitely were some disappointments in this series. I found that the look of it and the ideas were great. What didn't hold up as well was the set of characters. I thought they tended to be a little bit shallow, and the performances I didn't think were that engaging and that deep. And to a certain extent, the individual stories were also a little bit lacking. Not too bad. They were not as much as the characters were, but sometimes with the stories I found they were a little bit lacking, and certainly the characters were. And interestingly, Joe Ahern, who created Ultraviolet and wrote all six stories and directed all six stories, has specifically said that he does not write for character. Character drama is not his thing. And I think the combination of having him as a sort of non-character-focused person writing and directing maybe emphasized that a bit much. It might have been nice to see a little more character focus, a little more breadth in some of the characters. Some of them I felt were a little too dour, a little too bland. Might have been nice to see a little more in that way, and a little more variety in the way the stories were done. Eric, are there any things that you didn't like you'd like to point out?
Well, the sense that this is trying to be a hard science look at some beings that we, from the outside, would typically fit in the fantasy section.
Or at least the supernatural section.
Supernatural. There are still some of the things such as being vampire when killed, turning to dust instantly. That, as being trying to be a hard science thing, stretching things a little bit, in my opinion. Or with the reconstituted, I won't get into how it could be done in this series, but it's a similar stretch of the imagination, let's say that.
So you're having believability issues.
If it's trying to be hard science, those are still hard things to explain with energy and where does all the water go kind of thing. If a human is 90% water and certainly turning to ash, it's, I don't know. Other than that, I think it's a pretty good sort of supernatural hard science type show. That's the thing that catches me as being a science person.
Now we should talk about availability. If you want to see Ultraviolet, how would you find something? What's available? In Region 2, there is a two-disc set, which doesn't seem to be available directly from Amazon anymore, but it is available on the Amazon Marketplace on amazon.co.uk, and it's about £11 for a used copy. There are new copies that run a little bit more, but that's about how much it runs for a used copy on Amazon.
Well, in North America, we're a little bit more fortunate. There is a copy available on Amazon.com for $25.49 at this time. It's called Ultraviolet 2000 in brackets, if you're looking for it. Just to make sure you've caught the right one here. The DVD release date says 2001, and the series was released in 1998. But the item in Amazon is Ultraviolet 2000. And you see the picture of Suzanne Harker and Jack Davenport on the front.
That's right. And I believe those two are pretty similar releases. Couple of extras, not too many. So I think that brings us to our recommendations for Ultraviolet. Eric, what would you recommend?
Well, if you like the more scientific ones or more procedural, I think this could be something you could enjoy. It is pretty well self-contained. It can stand on its own as far as the series goes. Some are left open-ended, but this one wraps up all the local plot ties pretty much. And it was an entertaining watch overall.
Okay. I will say that this is quite a different series than almost anything else we've covered on British Invaders. It's actually one of the very few Channel 4 series that we've covered on British Invaders. It is a great series for something that has a dark look to it and a sort of dynamic modern look. In some ways, it feels like British sci-fi trying to be a bit like American sci-fi and has a nice ongoing story through it. If those types of things appeal to you, then absolutely check this out. It's a neat little series available for rental. I did find, as I said, that the characters as a character drama, as a sort of weekly drama, it isn't quite as strong as I would like. and it stands as being quite different from a lot of the sort of older, more traditional drama pieces and sci-fi drama pieces that you have in the UK. But it is an interesting one, and if this sort of modern dynamic look is something you appreciate, then absolutely, go for it and check it out. Although it remains, I would say, it's not at the top of my list. Ilona?
I would recommend it if you are into Supernatural. It gives it a different edge to it. It's not like X-Files, although you can kind of have a similar feel to it. It's not like anything else out there that has been in the past, I would say, 10 years. It stands alone on its own feet. You won't see it almost imitated if you've watched any kind of Supernatural thing. But yeah, it does stand on its own. It's got a very good story. I had no problems with it, except for those two episodes. And I say that if you have to be of strong constitution, you have to be of strong constitution to actually watch the middle two episodes, because if you have any problems, it will push buttons and it will make you want to actually turn it off at that point.
It certainly doesn't shy away from the issues.
But you liked it otherwise, I don't know.
Yes.
Okay. And you recommend it.
I do recommend it.
Okay.
So, in summary, Ultraviolet was a 6-episode 1998 Channel 4 series that had an ongoing story as well as individual stories. It was about a team of investigators, or possibly more of a team of killers, going after the Code 5s, that's Roman numeral 5, or V. And the Code 5s are almost but not quite vampires. They seem to be very much like vampires, and this series takes a very science-oriented and medical technology-oriented and technology in general-oriented type of approach to what would usually be the supernatural. So next time on British Invaders, we will be talking about Moonbase 3, a 6-episode BBC series co-produced by ABC from 1973 that was a project from Barry Letts and Terence Dix, who were producing and script directing Doctor Who at the time. So that was an interesting project of theirs, and it certainly will be an interesting one to discuss because it was quite different and has, shall we say, a mixed reputation. And next time we will be back to our regular format of two of us doing the discussion with myself and Damon from England. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you go to Facebook and search for British Invaders, you will find us there. So thank you for listening. This is Brian from Canada, signing off.
This is Eric from Canada, signing off.
And Ilona from Canada, signing off.